Penguin Random House Audio presents A Tempest at Sea by Sherry Thomas, read for you by Kate Redding. Note to listeners, this audiobook includes a downloadable PDF, which contains RMS Provence's deck plans. To my wonderful, kind and beautiful mother, with whom I love going on ocean voyages. 1. April, 1887. "There's something you're not telling me, Ash," said Charlotte Holmes. The night was starless, the sky low and heavy, but spring was beginning to make itself felt, as a certain fullness in the air, the swelling of blackthorn buds on the cusp of flowering. Charlotte was warmly wrapped in an Inverness cape, a deerstalker cap on her head. No one who saw her in her masculine attire now, if anyone could see in the pitch blackness, would have mistaken her for the pink silk-clad vixen who had successfully ambushed Lord Ingram Ashburton earlier in the evening. It had been their first meeting since her terribly inauspicious death in Cornwall, where her body was said to have been dissolved in a vat of perchloric acid. Her closest associates had mourned in a manner befitting those who could not publicly acknowledge their grief. But they had also worried in truth as weeks wore on with no news from her. Charlotte, even before she had been advised to stay away from her usual haunts following that spectacle on the Cornish coast, had decided on a safe haven, none other than Eastleigh Park, the country seat of the Duke of Wycliffe, Lord Ingram's eldest brother. The estate's hunting lodge had proved a peaceful abode for her, and, of course, an excellent location in which to lie in wait for Lord Ingram to turn up for his annual Easter visit. And now, after a few highly pleasurable hours becoming reacquainted in his bedroom in the main residence, he was escorting her back to the hunting lodge, as she could not be seen in his quarters come morning, whether as a man or a woman. The night was thick as a wall. She walked nearly blindly, but he had grown up on this estate and ambled along, guiding her with an occasional touch on her elbow or the small of her back. "I'll tell you when we're inside," he said, in response to her earlier comment, his tone deliberately light. But when they'd entered the hunting lodge and lit a few sconces, he did not divulge what he'd kept from her. Instead, he left with a hand candle to make sure that the structure, bigger than her ancestral home, was free from hidden intruders. Charlotte removed her caped coat and prosthetic paunch, strolled into the drawing room, and stretched out on a settee, the gold brocade upholstery of which was visibly fraying. The hunting lodge, an opulent addition to the estate 150 years ago, had not been improved in at least 2 generations. He returned, handed a biscuit tin to her, crossed the room to a padded chair upholstered in the same worn brocade, and leaned against its rounded armrest, one leg straight, the other half bent. He was rarely so informal in his posture, but even so, his shoulders remained open, his weight evenly distributed. He lifted his head and seemed about to speak, but didn't. A single lamp bronzed the antlers mounted above the door and delineated shadows in the hollow of his cheeks. Charlotte opened the tin, nibbled on an almond macaroon, and waited, though she had already guessed what he was about to tell her. It was not about Moriarty. Her lover was distracted, but not yet alarmed. Still, the matter had made him concerned for her safety. A task that required her to leave Eastleigh Park then? A task for Sherlock Holmes? And who could make such a request and be sure that he would, in fact, relay it to her? When she'd polished off the slightly too sweet macaroon, and he still hadn't spoken, she flicked crumbs from her fingertips and said, "What does my Lord Remington want, exactly? And is he not aware that the estimable consulting detective of 18 Upper Baker Street is not currently offering his services to the public?" Lord Remington, Lord Ingram's brother, was responsible for much of the intelligence gathering in the far-flung corners of the empire. But in recent months, he had taken a greater interest in the domestic side of things. Lord Ingram expelled a breath.
"Oh, Remington is more than aware of your absence from London. I believe he is of the view that rather than rusticating, you might as well lend him a helping hand."
No one who had attracted Moriarty as an enemy could afford to merely rusticate. Charlotte had been busy. "Is my Lord Remington dangling safety from Moriarty as a lure?" She had no plans to venture abroad on someone else's behalf for a lesser prize. Her lover looked grumpy, very nearly irate.
"At this moment, I'm not sure even the power of the Crown, let alone Remington, merely a servant of the Crown, could keep anyone safe from Moriarty."
"Surely that's too pessimistic an outlook."
"Surely you're right, madam. All the same, I find it difficult to be pleased about anything that involves risk to you."
She smiled to herself, opened the biscuit tin again, and took out a jam tart. "What exactly is Lord Remington offering me?"
"More or less what Moriarty thought he might. When you decide to re-emerge into the world, Remington will let it be known that to harm you would be to injure him."
A magical amulet it wasn't, but neither was it something to sneeze at.
"And in exchange," continued Lord Ingram, "he wants you to find a dossier that has gone missing. Remington has judged you very good at finding things."
"He's not wrong about that." Ever since her toddlerhood, Charlotte had always known not only where everything was located in the house, but also if any items had been misplaced. "However, I imagine that what he wants found would not be as easy to locate as Mrs. Watson's reading glasses."
"No. Not only does Remington not know where it is, he cannot even be sure who has it."
"Apparently, Lord Remington's underlings had been cultivating in secret a Prussian embassy attaché. But perhaps their practice of secrecy left something to be desired, for Herr Klein, the attaché, was abruptly recalled to the fatherland. Lord Remington's underlings, however, were convinced that before Herr Klein's hasty departure, he'd left them something. But Herr Klein had not stepped out of his hired house in the days immediately preceding his removal. Moreover, his house had been watched by parties both British and Prussian. So, to whom had he entrusted this dossier? The Kleins, husband, wife, and two young children, were no longer in Britain and would not have been available for questioning, even if Herr Klein had remained at his post. Their servants, relying on delivery for foodstuff and laundered garments, had also not left the place during the period of greatest interest. By the time Charlotte officially took on the commission, the house and the servants would have been searched multiple times by agents of the German Empire. Moreover, while she would be furnished with a list of names, individuals who had entered and departed the consular assistant's household during the most critical span of time, she would not be permitted to question anyone on the list for their connection to the Kleins or their reasons for visiting the Klein household.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?